Bonjour, bienvenue to the front page. It's Monday, the day after the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe won, in some style, by Britain's Blue Stocking. And I'm delighted to have you with us as we assess all the action from Longchamp and the biggest stories from the last week's racing. And I'm also delighted to have in the studio, fresh from St. Pancras, Lee Morrishead, who was over in Paris covering the race for the Racing Post. Lee, how was your weekend in Paris?
Great weekend in Paris. In fact, great 5 or 6 days in Paris. Took a bit of leave on the way there. Explored a fantastic old-fashioned cookware shop in the Sanche district, where I bought some cutlery, which turned out to be a potential security risk going through a garden hall this morning, which caused a bit of last-minute panic. But aside from that, great few days, really enjoyed the racing. We'll talk about the Arc in a second, but I thought the whole 2 days were particularly strong this year. That's not always the case. I think Champions Day has knocked some of the gloss off Arc weekend, but the gloss was restored this year.
Yes, we'll come to all things Paris in a second. Well, perhaps not the cutlery escapades. That will wait for another day.
It is very nice.
But also joining us from Ireland is our Ireland editor, Richard Forrestal. Unfortunately, Richard, you, like me, you were watching the race from the comfort of the sofa. But how did you find it? How was your weekend?
Yeah, good, busy, Tom. Lucky enough to be there the last couple of years, as you know, didn't make it this year and didn't watch it from the comfort of my sofa, unfortunately. I think I watched it on the phone out busy with kids, so I had to do a lot of catch up yesterday evening, but I did get to see the race. So it was a good race. It always is. It's the Arc. It's the one we all look forward to every autumn, and the culmination of a flat season. So yeah, it was good, busy as usual.
Thanks for that, Richard, and pleasure to have you with us. We're going to dive straight into our main story this week, which is of course Blue Stocking's victory in the Arc, and we're going to go first of all to the man who was on the ground to witness it. Blue Stocking, of course, wasn't in the race a week ago, but supplemented at great expense in a gamble that paid off in spectacular style.
Yeah, so just in terms of the race itself, as you say, she wasn't in the race a week ago. We didn't think she was going to be in the race after she finished fourth in the John Butt International. That was a good run, but it was one that suggested she was probably slightly exposed below the very best, or so Barry Maher from Judmont and Rafe Beckett thought,
so and understandably thought,
they were going to stick to the fillies and mares programme, which they did in the pre-Vermeer, but she won that so well, they decided to roll the dice and take part in what I think was generally acknowledged to be a substandard Arc in terms of the overall quality of the participants. And I think what we got was an Arc winner who, according to Racing Post ratings, is slightly below the average standard of Arc winners, but she is a very, very good mare with tremendous attributes. She won the race, I thought, in dominant fashion. It was an Arc in which Ryan Moore found himself having to make the running on Los Angeles. There wasn't the pace that they wanted for a horse, so I think they would acknowledge themselves, hasn't got a lightning turn of foot. So he went out in front. The big mid-race development was a sad one with the loss of Hayes Arc, who suffered a fatal injury that was tremendously regrettable and cast a shadow over the race. But as they came into the home straight, I think it was pretty obvious if you were a Blue Stocking backer or if you were Ross Orion that you're in the perfect position. He was sat second tracking Ryan Moore Los Angeles. When Ross Orion asked Blue Stocking to go about her business, she did it readily. And ultimately, she won very well indeed. Aventure, the filly who chased her home in the Vermeer, did so again with Los Angeles back in third. Andre Farb's pre-race fears of the French three-year-old colts might not be that good was borne out. His was the best of them, but finished only fourth. The anti-post favourite, Luc de Vega, was well beaten. Japan's quest for Arc glory goes on. Shin Emperor, in reality, ran a stinker. Some might say Yutaki Taki rode a bitter one on Al Riffa. His horse saw an enormous amount of daylight, but never mind, might be back next year at 56. Rafe Beckett will certainly be back. I think this has been the year in which he has undoubtedly showed that he is now an absolute elite-level trainer. He's trained this filly superbly well. He, though, was very quick to praise her constitution. So she's running a King George, a Judmont International, a Vermeer, now an Arc, and also Ross Orion, who hasn't been up the top tier as long as Rafe Beckett. But again, he has had a breakthrough year, and he produced a flawless ride to give himself, Rafe Beckett and Blue Stocking the biggest day of their racing lives. And for Judmont, of course, the operation that now represents the family of the late Prince Khaled Abdullah, their record seventh Arc de Triomphe. They have a love affair with the world's greatest flat race, as indeed do we all.
It's a tremendous recap there, Lee. Thank you very much. You've covered lots of angles. But one I wanted to explore further, Blue Stocking. So we said she wasn't in the race a week ago. They paid €120,000 to supplement her, having previously declared that they were going to stick to the fillies and mares program. Of course, a lot of the horses who were there at Longchamp on Sunday, you know, their seasons had revolved around this race. I mean, that couldn't have been further from the case with Blue Stocking, as evidenced by the requirement supplement. It really adds to the luster of the performance in that respect that this was not something they've worked back from, but in fact something that they thought, you know what, we're going to have to roll the dice because our horse is simply in showing us the right things, and we think, you know, she merits her chance in what is the greatest race in Europe.
I think that's right, and I think, you know, you can understand why she wasn't in the Arc initially. The entry stage for that comes up in early May. She at that point hadn't even run a group race. All she'd won was a Salisbury novice event. She'd run well in defeating Group 1 races, but she hadn't won a stakes race of any sort. But I think she's just surprised them through the year, not just with the level of performance that she's produced, but her consistency as well. Again, Rafe Beckett was very candid in saying he didn't think she would win. He thought there was no reason not to run her, in the sense that they looked under every part of the bonnet, etc., and they couldn't see any reason not to let her have a go at the race. But he didn't really think, given all she's done this year and 3 weeks on from a pretty hard race in the Vermeil, that she could bounce back. But bounce back she did, and say it turned out that form from 3 weeks ago was the key bit of form, and not for the first time. It wasn't just a supplementary entry that won the race, but it was a high class filly. They've got a great record in recent years, and so have the Brits, to be fair. We lamented on the show 7 days ago that we were only going to have one, at most two, British runners in the race, because at that point we had somewhere, but we didn't for sure have Blue Stocking. As it's turned out, the Brits have now won 5 of the last 10 Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. So for all that we often lament the well-being of British racing, we're still quite good at getting Arc winners.
And you and I have been privileged to see scenes of jubilous celebration in the winners' enclosure at Longchamp. It's always one of the great pleasures to see what victory in this storied race means for connections. Mm-hmm. We've already discussed Rafe Beckett and Ross O'Ryan, but give us a flavour of how they reacted to what was a career-defining triumph for both of them.
Well, Ross O'Ryan was exceptionally cool. He expressed his emotions out on the track. He did that thing that all jockeys seem to do now. They put the finger to the lips going past the post, which I can never really understand. But he did that.
Is that a shush or is that...
Well, I don't know. But
or a kiss?
I think that goes back... Well, I don't know.
Number one?
Initially, I think there was a... Was it Paddy Brennan did it after Imperial Commander's Gold Cup? Because there was that talk. Everyone had been talking about...
That was a shush.
Quarter and, yeah. Now, nobody's been having a go at Blue Stocking. Everyone loves Blue Stocking, so I can't imagine it was that. But he was really animated on the track. When you have those wonderful scenes as a jockey, where you see the huge Longchamp grandstands, everybody acclaiming you, he savoured every second of that. But in the press conference, he was actually incredibly calm, as he was in the post-race interviews. Rafe Beckett is a man who I think we all know often wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a very passionate man. He's a very energised man. I can't think of any of racing's participants who are more passionate when it comes to racing politics. Some steer away from it. Rafe Beckett doesn't do. On this occasion, I think the passion was reflective of what he'd just experienced. It was actually a touching moment when, you know, I got down to the paddock quite quickly after the race. Some were caught up in a bit of ascenseur trouble. The lift broke down for the press grandstand.
Oh, dear.
I know, yeah. I've managed to go use the service lift, so it's okay.
Oh, that is a disaster.
Yeah. Rafe was pretty emotional, you know. Having first said, I didn't think she could do it, he told the story of how he was walking underneath the tunnel with his daughter after the race, and he said to her that his first recollection of the Ark was watching on TV in 1980 when Detroit won. And as he said that, he was fighting back tears. And I think that just shows that for all the debates we might have about the Ark, and we'll have a few more in the next few minutes about where it might go in the future, it remains undoubtedly, I think, perhaps aside from the Derby for some racing participants, the one that flat people want to win most. It is the creme de la creme. It is the world's greatest flat race. It's Europe's greatest horse race. And winning that race, for all that Ralph Becket has achieved, and he's achieved a lot, he's won multiple classics, that was what meant the most to him. And I've never seen him so emotional.
Richie, I'd like to bring you in here now to get your take on the race. First of all, what did you think of the winner, and how do you assess the standard of this year's Ark? There was quite a lot of debate around whether it was a subpar renewal.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know, and there's the added debate then, of course, of the mares and gelding, or the geldings not being allowed, sorry. Look, she was a good winner. I mean, in a way, she's been the filly of the season. You know, she's after winning three Group 1s. You forget, like, people talk about the Vermeer as a trial. That's a Group 1 as well, and she won that convincingly, and she won convincingly again on Sunday. You know, we talk about, you know, as analysts, you know, and commentators about maybe it being a bad Ark or a bad Gold Cup or whatever. You know, you try and win one, as they say. It's not easy to do. I think most of the best horses that wanted to be there were there. Augusta Rodin was never going. You know, I think if you go back to the spring before the horse even ran this year, O'Brien and Coolmore had a route plotted out from that didn't include the Ark. Economics obviously had a campaign that didn't seem to have it on the agenda. He had a mid-season break, and he won the Champion Stakes, and he was excellent in that, and he's a 10 furlong horse at the moment. He looks like he'll stay further. But he hasn't run over further than 10 furlongs yet. So, I mean, you know, and then you have the fact that she was supplemented ultimately. So that added to it. And she was one who should be there, and she was there. And I know there's a lot of talk about the geldings. I'd be inclined to think it should be left as it is. I don't think there's a whole lot wrong with it. I remember doing a column a few years ago when they were talking about moving the Ark. And I said, it's about as close to perfection as we can get in the game. It's the one race that throws up a classic, if you like, every year. And I didn't think it should be moved at the time. And I don't think they should be opening up to gelding. I don't think it's necessary. The race has served us well with brilliant champions over the last 100 plus years. The talk, obviously, is about Goliath and Calandigan and so on. But, I mean, I get it. You know, I can see why it's coming this year. Goliath won a King George. I understand that. And he wasn't there. And beat Blue Stocking in the process. But those two horses have run 16 times between them, and they've won Group 1 to their name. Were they really that big a miss, ultimately? You know, I would argue, you know, possibly. Look, they were a miss, but I would argue in the greatest scheme of things, you're not going to change the whole nature of the race on the basis of 1 year where it throws up a couple of good geldings. But yeah, great event yesterday. Superb for Ross O'Ryan. As Lee conveyed there, he's a tremendously cool young fella. Tore up the pony racing scene here for a few years before he went to England. And he's making a name for himself. You look at a rider like that with that sort of composure on the big day, and that sort of cool head, and you just you know he's going to be a feature in these big races for years to come. And he's with Ralph Becket, he's with a guy who you can see is starting to make a big impression consistently at this level. I remember talking to him last year after he was just beaten in the Ark at Westover, and he was gutted. Pleased to have seen the horse run so well again, but he was gutted to run in such a good horse in Ace Impact. But you look at the nature of the training ranks maybe in Britain at the moment. You have Michael Stout retiring. Obviously, you have the older brigade, your Gosdens. I know Tate is stepping in there with William Haggis. But there is a kind of a transition. And at the front of that would be someone like Ralph Becket. He's consistently bringing up these good horses now. And he delivers with them when he has them. So, a good Ark. There's so much going on. Even, you know, it was straightforward. In a way, for Ross, the things just fell into place for him. If you're going to want to track someone in a race like that when you're a young fella at that level, Ryan Moore is the one. And he had decided they weren't going a proper gallop, and he picked it up, and Ross O'Ryan just followed him, and it fell into place nicely for him. But yeah, great race.
Lee, there's a bit of an oddity before the arc when we had a non-runner who was then not a non-runner because it turned out to be a non-runner. You had to pay 55,000 euros. Yeah. This was Fantastic Moon.
Yeah.
Tell us what happened.
So the connections of Fantastic Moon had made clear all the way through the build-up that they would have concerns for him, for how well he'd be able to run if the ground was testing at Longchamp on Sunday. Scott Burton, our France correspondent, had spoken to Tony's on Saturday, and they had given a penetrometer reading below which they would not be happy for him to take his chance. Sunday was a wet, dank, drizzly day in Paris. It was that rain that gets you wet without you realising, as my mother used to say. About an hour or so before the race, we were told, like the owners announced on X, and then Scott was told by the owners that Fantastic Moon would not be running in the Arc de Triomphe. However, he hadn't officially been withdrawn at that stage. And it was put to the connections by France Gallo, French Racing's governing body and regulator, that it wasn't as simple as just pulling him out. They produced a form that they would have to fill in to take him out of the race. And within that form, it was highlighted to them that there is a set percentage of a total prize fund that connections need to pay if they withdraw a horse from a race. And because the ARC is so valuable, the fine on this occasion would be €55,000. Now, no matter how wealthy you are, that can buy a few, quite a few packs of cornflakes. And they decided in the end to let the horse run. They were told as well by the France Gallo stewards that not only should he be running, but that if he was running, he would have to be seen to run his merits too. They wouldn't be allowed to let the stalls open and let him doss around out the back. He would have to run his race. So it was a really interesting development. And there's that contrast between, again, what France Gallo could do as a governing body that has much more power than some of its European counterparts. There was that contrast between how non-runners are treated in some other jurisdictions. And I know from speaking to figures within British Racing's leadership at Longchamp on Sunday and asking what they thought about this, it was pointed out that it's a move that does come with dangers. And they said, what happens if you, in effect, force a horse to run in those circumstances and the horse suffers a terrible injury, you're then leaving yourself open to accusations that the sport made that horse run and then this has happened to that horse. Now, that's obviously a real big what-if scenario, but I know it's something that would be in the back of the mind of some jurisdictions, but France Gallo have tremendous power and they use that power to ensure that Fantastic Moon couldn't be taken out of the arc at a whim.
If you were a punter on Fantastic Moon, you wouldn't be overjoyed by that turn of events because you're pretty much thinking at that point, well, I've got absolutely no chance. Connections, no, I've got no chance. Yeah. They want to withdraw the horse, but I'm going to see my money go up in smoke.
I agree. And I think maybe in 12 months' time, now this has happened, it won't just be connections. It'll also be punters who are more aware of the powers that France Gallo have at their disposal. I suppose if you're looking at it from France Gallo's perspective, they would say, well, we have presented a field for this race. People have made decisions on who to bet on in the race, having looked at the entire field, how the race might play out. And we don't think it's right that you can just take the horse out. And they would probably also say that whilst people have different views about how the ground rode at Longchamp on Sunday, according to the official going report and readings, there was only really a small incremental change in the ground at Longchamp, and according to the governing body, it wasn't enough to take the horse out. They actually also said to them, when I asked them, would this apply to any non-runner in the arc? They said, in effect, it would, but if, for example, you try and take a horse out with a veterinary certificate, the fine you pay would have been less than for
What a fascinating system, and I feel we could talk about that for a while, but we're going to move on. I want to, before we leave the arc behind, I want to quickly touch on the attendance figure, which was 22,000 down almost 4,000 from the prior year. And quite a low figure in sort of recent history of the race.
Yeah, so 22,300 people came to the Arc on Sunday. The Saturday felt quite busy this year by the normal Saturday standards, but Arc Day itself, 22,300. Last year, 26,000 people had been at Longchamps for the Arc. If you rewound back to 2019, which was the second year after Longchamps reopened following the redevelopment, 45,000 people had been at the track. Now, there had been criticism that the place was overcrowded in its new guise, but if you rewind back to the final year when the Arc was staged at Longchamps before the bulldozers came in, 55,000 people saw Golden Horn win the Arc under Frankie. So in the space of less than 10 years, 9 years, the Arc attendance has gone from 55,000 to 22,300. Now, I don't think, given the way Longchamps is these days and the size of the facility, they would want 45,000 people anymore, because it was a bit of a crush in 2019. But I'm sure they would have wanted many thousands more than the 22,300
they got.
Around
about the sort of attendance Ascot gets for the King George, or to put it another way, less than Ascot gets for the Shergar Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Puts in context. Before we leave behind Longchamps, one performance from the undercard you want to highlight?
Equine performance. I still think Zara Khan is a star. She was beaten the Prix Marcel Boussac. I think she'll win classics next year and go on to great things. In terms of one of the equine performances, I'd say Kyprios in the Prix de Cadran. He was probably dossing most of the way around, but he still won that race. And in terms of human performance, big day on Sunday for Kieran Schumach. Inevitably got slightly overlooked because it came after the Arc. But how many times have we said this year it's important for him to have his first Group 1 or Grade 1 winner for the Gosdens? He got it on Sunday, and both he and John Gosden afterwards were very keen to stress that you can only really win with the raw material that you've got. And on the equine front, it hasn't been a stellar year for the Gosdens.
Quiet,
and John was the first to admit that after the race. But I'm sure Kieran Schumach is hoping, and the Gosden team will be hoping, that that might now silence a few critics.
Wonderful. Thank you, Lee. Just before we move on to our next story, a quick announcement that we are running on our WhatsApp channel called RP Insider, a series over the coming days where our stars will be giving you exclusively their horses to follow for the jump season. Begins with Tom Segal today. And for more information on our WhatsApp channel, watch this. Welcome back. For our next story, we're going to go over to Richie, who's going to tell us about the latest in the long-running Irish Gambling Act saga, which is reaching its conclusion with some fairly negative potential outcomes for racing in Ireland. Richie, tell us about what the latest is.
Yeah, this is the Gambling Regulation Bill. As you say, Tom, it's been moving its way through Parliament here, government buildings, over the past year or more, 18 months maybe at this stage. It moved into the Seanad, which is the upper house, in May, and it's been there over the last few months. It completed the committee stage on Wednesday, and now it moves into report stage, and it looks like it's going to be passed into law imminently. I noticed recently after the budget, when Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, the second in command, was interviewed, one of the two things he mentioned, one of the two pieces of legislation he mentioned as potentially kind of holding up an immediate election, was the gambling bill. So it's high on their agenda. And anyone who has read kind of Conor Fennelly's coverage of this over the past 18 months or so would be aware of that, and aware that they are determined to get it through in its current format. And from a racing side of things, there has been kind of unanimous support for the review of these laws, as it were, but they haven't been touched for so long. But there is one element that has been problematic, and that is the gambling advertising watershed between, I think it's 5:30 a.m. and 9 p.m. So, you know, broadcasters can't show gambling ads in that window. Now, you know, for most broadcasters, it's not a problem. The one it is a problem for is the subscription channels. So we're talking here about Sky and Racing TV. And both initially suggested it would be unviable and would be very problematic. And then we had a slight curveball last week, when Sky confirmed that they basically have an Irish stream ready to go that will adhere to all the various laws of the land. So I thought that was interesting because if you go, you know, there's a broader context here of the media rights saga that went on last year when the Irish media rights were up for renewal and we had RMG and SIS on one side, they're the rights holders as it is and as it was at the time, and we had ARC and Sky, you know, trying to muscle back in on it again. And, you know, you've now got a situation basically where Sky have moved first and said, hey, look, we can do this, it's fine. You know, we'll manage it. Now, the existing contract runs until 2029, but it has kind of just put it up to RMG a bit, if you like. I don't know how it's going to transpire for them. They insist that they're not as big an entity, obviously, as Sky, and it's much more expensive and not as logistically straightforward for them to create an Irish stream or some version of an Irish stream separate to the existing one. They put a price tag of $2 million on it last year, and that they couldn't absorb that sort of extra expense. So, you know, what happens next? It will be enacted in law, but it looks like possibly this week over the next few days. There will probably then be a break because, as I understand it, the bookmakers will then have to be relicensed under the new law, and that will take time. Suzanne Eade of HRI said recently that she didn't expect anything to happen until 2026, ultimately, as in a, you know, material change. So there is a bit of a window there for Racing TV to get themselves sorted, but, you know, it's happening, so they will have to get themselves sorted. But I just thought the intervention of Sky, first up, they don't broadcast Irish racing, but they have tailored an Irish stream for it. I just thought it was interesting when you look at the broader context of the media rights landscape here and all the palaver of last year.
Yeah, I have to say it doesn't necessarily come as any great surprise to me that when a solution needs to be found, it is found, because that tends to be the way of these things. The question I think it's going to be very interesting is, what impact does it have on the finances of Irish racing? What impact does it have on the value of Irish racing rights? It seems extremely improbable that racing is going to disappear from the screens of Irish fans. But whether the sport itself is damaged by these changes will be, you know, where the real consequences are felt.
Yeah, and it's going to have to readjust, obviously. Brian Kavanagh from the Curragh last year was at pains to stress, you know, that they're not reliant on bookmakers for sponsorship and so on. But bookmakers and racing have obviously been intertwined for, you know, from the year dot. So if they're losing that sort of advertising revenue, you know, does it ultimately become a less attractive product to broadcasters? Obviously, it won't be to the racing channel broadcasters, but to the terrestrial TV broadcasters and so on. So, yeah, it's going to have to adjust, and it'll be a new landscape for sure.
Thanks very much, Richie. We're going to move on now to look at another sort of industry hot topic, this time prize money in Britain. And this was the story last week that the Thoroughbred Group, which represents the participants in racing, trainers, owners, breeders, etc., had put forward prize money proposals to their counterparts at the racecourses and the BHA. These proposals would see racecourses commit a proportion of their gross racing profit as a contribution to prize money. Peter Saville, the former BHP boss who has been running a sort of guerrilla campaign in racing over the last couple of years, seeking to mobilise trainers in favour of higher prize money. His group has put forward an alternative approach which looks at a contribution of turnover being sought for prize money. And he was pretty scathing about this new proposal. He said, gross profit is meaningless as it allows courses to inflate their direct costs and thereby minimise what they put into prize money. He said, in fact, a gross profits approach encourages race courses to inflate their costs, to inflate direct costs, and doesn't encourage them to run a tight ship. Lee, what was your take on these latest exchanges on prize money?
Well, I think it's welcome that Thoroughbred Group has come forward with proposals for new commercial partnerships. I think most people, even probably race courses, would acknowledge that something is necessary. The Thoroughbred Group claims that in real terms, prize money has fallen and exec contribution by race courses has fallen. So I think it's a welcome intervention, and I think there is plenty of merit in what they're proposing and how they are going to, or how they plan to do it. It seems to me that the reaction from the racecourse sector, the early reaction, was largely positive. I wasn't surprised that Peter Saville's reaction was negative. I'd have been astonished if it wasn't negative.
He's not going to turn around and say, do you know what, the Thoroughbred Group have got this cracked. He does have a point, though, about profits and turnover.
He does. I suppose the Thoroughbred Group would come back and say to him, the way that you plan to do it is too simple. It benefits certain sorts of racecourses over other racecourses, and it doesn't reflect the fact that, say, for example, if you are a racecourse, and yes, you might have a big turnover in terms of catering, but if you're staging a big meeting, your outlay on that catering is huge as well. So your relative profit might not be as much as people might think. I think what is clear is that not long after we had those two special reports on how British racing is run and the many problems within it, we referenced there how traditionally, historically, you've had this impasse between racing's various different stakeholder groups, primarily the racecourses v the participants, often making life hard for the BHA. Here you have an example, a latest example, of friction within a participant group here. Who are racecourses supposed to listen to? On the one hand, they've got the Thoroughbred Group, which is there to represent participants, saying they would like racecourses to do one thing in one way. And you've got Peter Saville, as you say, who's created this new guerrilla group, this pressure group, saying that no, we think you should do it another way. Peter Saville is saying that he has 150 trainers who he is exclusively representing and who will do as he says. And yet racecourses would say, well, you're saying that, but they are the other people, they are members of a representative group. And I do find it strange as well, I think I've referenced this before, to understand how the Saville plan works, in the sense that he says he has 150 trainers who will exclusively do as he says and run races, or not run in races that the PRA says they shouldn't run in. But those trainers are employed by owners. Ultimately, it's owners, surely, that have to decide where the horses are going to race, not the trainers who they employ. It's the trainers who are employed, not the owners. So surely it's the owners who ultimately have to make the decisions.
And all of this is going to come to a head, we imagine, over the coming months, particularly as we get into 2025. We're still quite uncertain what sort of prize money we're going to be looking at, with lots of headwinds affecting the sport around betting, around attendances. So there is a very significant potential for this to develop beyond what it currently is, which is a sort of a quite esoteric squabble, into a all cards on the table battle royale.
And it's a squabble that also needs to be resolved fast, because we're in a situation whereby we've heard in recent days, been reported in the Racing Post, that Racing PLC, Racing Leadership, have gone back to government, the new Labour government, and said, we would really like you, we think it's very important that you reopen the levy reform folder. We almost got there before. We really want it to get done very soon. It's very important that it is done soon. Now, if you're government, you would say, okay, so you guys are all agreed on everything then. And they will look at a sport and say, okay, so the owners, trainers, jockeys and stable staff, you've got actually one group representing you saying that you want this to happen and another group saying you want that to happen. Government wants to see sports that are united and presenting a single voice at all times. I think if government sees what's going on here, they would question whether racing is in a position to be making a case to the government about helping it, when racing maybe isn't helping itself.
Thanks, Lee. This subject, prize money, of course, is an absolute mainstay of our Racing Post Members Club subscription product. That's where we have all of our most in-depth journalism, opinion, special reports, investigations, alongside, of course, things like race replays and tipping from our experts. To find out more about Members Club, watch this advert, please. Welcome back. Final story this week, again, sort of reflecting on one of the big talking points of every jumps year, pretty much, which is the Grand National and whether it needs to change further. We had outgoing Jockey Club Chief Executive Nevin Truesdale speaking about this last week. He made quite a stir when he said that it is a race that we need to think about maintaining its acceptability to society. It's one of racing's great social assets, sporting assets rather. But he said they'd done polling around the public perception of the Grand National, which was worsening significantly, and that last year, more than half of those asked said they felt the race was either cruel or fairly cruel. And he concluded, if we want the race to be sustainable for the long term, we have to evolve alongside society's views. Provoked some pretty strong views. Some agree very much with Nevin and think he is correct that the sport must evolve alongside changing attitudes. Others despair that the sport's leaders are not willing to stand up for the great race that is the Grand National, even after so many significant changes have been made to the race, including this year a reduction in the field size. Richie, no prizes, I think, for guessing on which side of that debate you sit.
Yeah, sure. Look, Tom, I've been objecting to this for a long time, to no avail, really. You know, I don't know if he's looking for a reason to make changes again. I don't know if that's what the Jockey Club are at. I don't know why they're polling on this or who they're polling. How big is the poll? I don't know. But for a long time now, they've been meddling with it and tweaking it. And we're left at the moment with a race that was, you know, fairly dull and boring last year. It's not the race it was. And as I keep coming back to on this, every time you make changes and then something goes wrong and you have a fatality or two and there's a bit of an emphasis on it, you know, which ultimately passes over, then they go at it again because they have to have the perfect, you know, 100% safe race. It's not possible. It's a high-risk sport. You know, they've already gone too far, in my opinion, and I would hate to think they will do any more to reduce because it's not the challenge it was, and it's lost an awful lot of its luster. Yet it still has millions and millions of people watching it. The vocal minority kick up once a year for a few days and then they're gone again and we don't hear from them anymore. They have got to at some point stand over the race and back it and back the sport, because it's ultimately jump racing that will suffer in the long term if they don't defend our, you know, our greatest race.
It is the peril of being led by polling. Not that it doesn't have value, but if you ask people a question without context, and you're going to get an answer. I always remember one that they did, it was a couple of years after lockdown, and they asked people whether they wanted to return to shutting down all the nightclubs, shutting down all the pubs, and it was about 25% of people said yes. So, you know, that's what I basically call, you've got the shut it down core constituency who will just say they dislike anything. You know, it is inevitable. You're going to get a response out of people. What you don't get is any sense of how deeply held those views are and whether they're totally transitory or, in fact, something that people attach great significance to.
Yeah, and I come back to the point about staff. I just wonder if they're looking for a particular answer or a route at this stage, because I don't know why they keep going at this. And it was strange that this came up last week in October. It would make you pull your hair out to be having this discussion, you know, in the autumn before the jump season has even got underway, to think that they're going at it again, or they're looking for an excuse to go at it again, because that's what it's beginning to feel like.
Well, of course, there'll be a new Jockey Club chief executive who'll be making any decisions around that. But we'll leave it there for this week. Thanks very much to my guests, Richard Forrestal and Lee Modishead, for this whistle stop trip around all the big racing stories from the last week, and of course a focus on the fantastic Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. Thank you very much to yourself at home for tuning in, and please do join us again next week when we will have more debate and discussion on the biggest stories of racing. Until then, goodbye.